11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. A reminder, day baseball today. The Royals are in Milwaukee.
Hell
Verns
yeah.
On deck show at noon right here on your home for KC Sports. 96.5 The Fan. Couple Royals notes before we get into some Final Four discussion. The Royals lineup did come out earlier today. Jonathan India is leading off, is playing third base. So great news after that scary scene against Cleveland yesterday. Also, just moments ago, the Royals made a roster move. Thyron Blanco, unfortunately, placed on the 10-day IL, right Achilles. I don't know if it's tendonitis, but it's something with his right Achilles. And then Tyler Tolbert has been selected from AAA Omaha.
Who's also very fast, if you're curious. Ian Kraft, who works over the Royals in the media department, said this stat: Tolbert brings elite speed to the Royals since his pro debut. So since he started in the minors and was a professional baseball player in 2019, he has stolen 243 bases. He's only been caught 16 times.
Jeez. So he's going to fill that same role right there. The same role right there.
So most bases stolen out of any professional baseball player and the minor league level. Second was Estuary Ruiz, a former Kansas City Royal who they traded to the A's, and Thyron Blanco, the guy who he just got called up for. So if you're curious if Tolbert can steal bases late, the answer is yes.
All right, so just a small move there. Hopefully it's a short stint for Thyron Blanco, but it looks like they've got somebody that can fill that exact same type of role.
He'll always have that crown bat, the crayon bat week when he...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was the yellow, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it a yellow bat? That was crazy. But what's so funny about it, it just reminds you how early we are in the season now, and then also that short period of time. Because there were legitimate people that said because of that week, and they thought, he needs to play way more. It's like... There's certain players that are great role players and stuff, and you can have a great MLB career doing that for a long time. But doesn't mean they need to play now 95 games or 100 games. We've said that over and over. All right, I want to talk a little college basketball. Final Four is set in San Antonio for starters, which we've talked about. I think it is the best Final Four site based off the Riverwalk. I would put San Antonio, New Orleans and Vegas. Drew's shaking his head. He wants to throw Indy. In fairness, I haven't been to Annapolis, so I can't say yes
or
no.
It's not on his personal ranking system.
So it doesn't fall. I've been to a Final Four in New Orleans. I've been to San Antonio on the Riverwalk, and we've obviously been to Vegas. So
They got a good reputation as a host city.
It's hosted a lot of big-time events, but those three cities would be my rotation. So I'm excited that it's in San Antonio because it's a great scene on the Riverwalk with the different fan bases. And then now, for the second time since expansion, Final Four has all four number one seats. I'll be honest, I love it. I love the fact that we get the four number one seats. This was a year where throughout the season, when we talked college hoops, we said, hey, this seems like a year where there's a clear cut. At first, it was just Auburn and Duke, better than everybody else. And then Florida got hot late in the year, maybe Florida's the best team in the country. Well, all four, and here's why I like it, all four, you can make a case. Maybe you don't agree with the opinion, but you can make a case all four could really win the national title. That's not like a crazy thought. All four teams, Duke and Houston and Florida and Auburn, can all win the title. And the matchups that we're going to get, the Duke-Houston one, number one offense in Duke, number one defense in Houston. I just love that and what that sets up matchup-wise. And then Florida and Auburn, two best teams in the best conference in college basketball here in 2025, the SEC, Florida Auburn. So I'm excited. We get great matchups. And I'll be honest, I might be in the minority overall. I love the upsets early on. We didn't get that. But when it comes down to this, for the second time in Final Four history, we get all four number one seeds. That's awesome. I would rather see Duke play Houston than Duke take on 12 seed Florida Atlantic, where they're going to be 9.5 or 10 point favorites. I don't. It's a great story. I don't want the blowout in the Final Four, and I don't think we're getting that.
So here's the thing. That is, I think it might be wishful thinking to say, and I don't think we're getting that, because the only first, this has been an awful tournament. Just flat out boring as hell. There are five decent games in the entire thing. It has stunk. And the same argument you're making for the number one seeds is the exact argument you could have made for the Elite Eight. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and 1-3. Games stunk, and stunk. They all stunk. None of them were close. One got close at the end, kind of, with Ole Miss. No good games in the Elite Eight, even though it was the top, it was seven of
you're ignoring
the top
the Sweet 16,
eight
though.
Seeds.
You're ignoring the Sweet 16, which was really, really good. I don't know if you watched them, but Sweet 16 was great.
I did watch some of the Sweet 16, and the Elite Eight, the same argument for all four ones, we're going to get good games now. We should have gotten good games for the Elite Eight, and we got zero.
No, I push back on that because we said throughout the season that the top two teams in the country were probably Auburn and Duke. Now they're going to actually potentially face off with each other. Nobody thought that Duke and Tennessee or Houston and Tennessee, that Tennessee was the same class of team as those. That's the point. These four have been the best teams in the country for 90%, at least two of them 90%, the other two maybe 60% of the season. That's what I get what you're saying. The matchups in the Elite Eight, higher seed versus higher seed, sure. My argument is that these four are clearly the best and have been for most of the year. Now they're facing off. Tennessee, very evidently, not anywhere near the same class as any of the four teams neither was Michigan State.
I hope you're – look, I'm not disagreeing that these were at any point the top four seeds, but I'm just saying it's not guaranteeing us good games.
Well, I'm not guaranteeing it. I'm saying on paper, these are – from an intrigue and an excitement level, I'm way more excited if you told me that it's Duke versus Houston, which it is, versus Duke against Wofford or Duke against Florida Atlantic. That would not be exciting to me because I've seen that play out. That's not – it's not even just the result of the game. I'm talking about the buildup this week. I am genuinely excited to get to Saturday night. A couple years ago, I was not excited knowing that – I keep using Florida Atlantic, but because they obviously went on a run. But pick any 12 plus seed. That did not excite me going in knowing they were likely to get their ass kicked.
Yeah, and look, and someone's mentioning Texas Tech versus Florida. That was a Sweet 16 game. I didn't say that wasn't a good game.
That was a great game. Arkansas, great game. Texas Tech went to overtime, did it not?
I didn't say there were zero good games in the tournament. I said there were five, and those in the Sweet 16. I'm saying in the Elite Eight, the game stunk. You're ignoring those and going to the Sweet 16. Sweet 16 had a couple of good games. No doubt, not arguing it.
You said,
definitely
the reason why I'm pointing out, you said it's the worst tournament you can remember.
It is an awful tournament. So. In my opinion, it was an awful tournament.
That's fun.
Some of that is a volume game. When we point out the seven games in the tournament were good out of 90, I'm that's a bad ratio. I would say under normal tournaments, I think we get more good games than that. But because of the sheer lack of there were no upsets the whole way. There were very few in the round of 64, very few in the round of 32, very few in the round of 16, none in the Elite Eight. And there can't be in the Final Four, really, because they're all one seeds, obviously. Not that you need an upset then. Now
I agree with the upsets.
Games.
The upsets typically happen in the first two rounds anyway. And those did not happen this year. I'm not disagreeing with you that we didn't have. We said that at the time that the first weekend of the tournament, Thursday and Friday, were underwhelming. I'm with you. That was not a good Thursday, Friday from a excitement level and when wanting buzzer beaters or wanting the upsets. We didn't get that.
Maybe they can save it with the Final Four because the Sweet 16 to this point is the only round that's mattered. Because, 64-32, we didn't get it. Elite Eight, I think we have to agree we didn't get it, right? There was no – three of them were blowouts, and one was Ole Miss trying to make a late run, and it didn't matter.
I think it's not as much about it's more about the matchups and the way that they play. Alabama shoots 75% of their shots are threes. They were off against Duke because Duke has a really good defense, and as a result, Alabama got smacked. I mean, Tennessee couldn't make an open shot to save their life against a really good Houston defense. They got smacked. That doesn't mean that the matchup was bad or that I think it comes down to they didn't make their shots. And
yeah, but it's no different than McNeese State got their ass kicked. I mean, you shot bad, it was a bad match. I don't know, Drew. I think it might've just been a bad matchup. To Gold's point, actually, the four teams were probably just a step ahead of literally everyone else. Look, maybe they can redeem themselves with three outstanding games to wrap it up. Right. And your wish comes true. And that we get that where Duke and Houston is an absolute epic game. And on the other side, Florida and Auburn's an epic game. And then we get an epic national championship. And then the tournament might feel different to me then. It might.
Yeah, I just
hate
I hate the standard, though, that we're now, I guess, setting before we even head into Saturday, which is for it to be great now, Duke has to win on a Cooper flag last second three and they have to storm the court. I'm not saying we're going to have a Disney movie in the Final Four.
No, I'm just
weekend.
Saying a good game.
Yeah.
We didn't have a good game in the last round. One before we had a couple, there's no doubt.
Did we have this conversation last year when the Final Four happened and UConn obliterated everybody along the way? We didn't have this conversation.
It was a better tournament up to that point.
And the national title game was a 20-point game. The national title game, according to what people are talking about with this tournament, it sucked. But everybody was celebrating UConn and I feel like the conversation around this season is so much more different and it doesn't make any sense.
You and I are aligned, but in fairness,
last year.
You and I are aligned for the most part, but in fairness to Coach, I think he is probably in the majority opinion. The reason why the tournament is great, casual fans don't pay attention. Most of us don't pay attention to college basketball till now, and so you expect the upsets in Thursday and Friday of that first weekend, and you expect
and more good games. Yeah.
And so I don't think you're in the minority opinion at all on this. I think you're probably a majority.
I
think though the way the tournament, there's a lot of people like I would rather have the best teams in the Final Four. I don't think that's the majority opinion at all.
I kept trying to go back to the Elite Eight. Like I kept trying to watch the games. And I'm like useless Elite Eight to watch. Unless you had bets on it, there was no point
to Cody's
of tuning in.
To Cody's point, if you're going to watch a blowout, like the same thing I think in college football exists. If I'm going to watch a blowout and I know it's going to happen, I would rather see the Cinderella get their ass kicked than see one of the than see a power. I get that side of things. I think I totally get it. Where it look, if the Elite Eight delivered and it was all single digit games, I think it's really hard to argue. I'd rather have a Cinderella team in there. But you watch Alabama play Duke and you're like, you know what? I'd rather have seen throw anybody in there. VCU. I'd rather see VCU. I'd rather see UNC Wilmington play Duke and lose the way that Alabama did rather than Alabama get beat the way that they did. I think that I get it.
Yeah, no, I think.
But I'm with you too that the having the one seeds in the
Florida
tournament.
Florida winning Texas Tech was Elite Eight, but okay.
That was a great game. That was a great game. And Texas Tech blew that thing. Should have won.
Yeah, having the one seeds in, it should, again, it should. I knocked on the mic.
I was like, what are you doing over there, man?
If we have two blowouts, I don't. What's the conversation going to be? Like, look, I mean,
I'm not guaranteeing.
Houston wins by 10 points, are we going to say that it's boring? Because I don't.
Yeah, I'm saying it's boring now. So if we get blowouts, yes, I will continue to say that this tournament stinks. Like, Drew, if it stunk the whole way and then the last few games stink, then yeah, it stunk. Like, I'm not going to change my opinion based on what. Can it redeem itself in my eyes a little bit? If Gold's right, and four number one seeds and the four best teams in the country, which I think we all agree with, have three epic battles, cool. Kind of a saving grace. To that point, Gold, I'll care less.
Yeah,
it's a four seed didn't get there or anything like that. That's fine.
Yeah. We've talked a ton about, NIL's impact on this tournament, what's to be expected, and this is only the second time that we've seen all four number ones make it to a Final Four. Even in the NIL, I truly think this is a unique year. Yes, will there be less mid-majors going on deep runs? I think overall correct. But I also think there's going to be an overreaction. Like next year when everybody's filling out their brackets next March and we're talking about bets next March for the tournament, you're going to actually maybe be able to get value on the mid-majors because everybody's just going to assume that it's going to be all the powerhouses that win again. I would not be surprised next year if we get back to seeing some of the upsets. Now, do I think we're going to see the same stretch of like three double-digit seeds making the Sweet 16 again? I don't know if we'll ever see that again. I'm not sure. But I don't think now we're just going to always have the top four seeds make it. This is a unique year because these really were the four best team, like not just because they're in the final, truly these were the four best teams all year. It was not a tough call for the committee to determine who the four number one seeds were when they were coming up with Selection Sunday.
So if you're excited about, like, I totally understand, like, especially for you, Gold, you made this point long before, you're fine with upsets until we get to the Final Four, and then you want like the big boys, right? You want the best teams going, and it doesn't mean you get a good game, Drew, to your point. It doesn't mean you get a good national championship game. UConn can still just run you out of the building. I'm not saying the entire tournament is determined based on what happens in the game. I'm just saying, like, the only way to salvage it for me is that version of it. And yeah, I do think that you lose some of the tournament magic if it turns into college football and it's just Georgia and Alabama and the same five schools every year down there into the wire. It takes some of the juice out of it a little bit for it. And yeah, to this point, I don't think there's been enough good games. Just overall, I don't think there's been enough good games.
Yeah, there's been more disparity, I think, along the lines of just the first round, whether it's upsets or not. I it's interesting because I think the same thing happens in college football where we all want the Cinderella story to be there. And then when they play, like when St. Peter's got killed by Kentucky in the Elite Eight, whatever year that was, a few years ago, everybody was like, I would have rather seen somebody else other than St. Peter's in there. But those are the same people who wanted St. Peter's to get there in the first place. So you got to make up your mind. Either you want to see the blowout of a Cinderella team get smacked in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, or
fine with that.
You want to see a better matchup, which is not going to have St. Peter's.
Which doesn't guarantee me not a blowout, though. That's the problem. It's like, on the other one, at least I get the Cinderella. The good matchup, right? Alabama and Duke doesn't guarantee me a good game. They got their ass kicked.
No, I just think it says more and more, though, like, the four that are left are that much better than everybody else. That's at least how I took it. Like, these four were the dominant teams in college basketball. By the way, Florida, Auburn, Florida's a 2.5-point favorite. Duke, Houston's the late game on Saturday in San Antonio. Duke, a 4.5-point favorite right now on Houston, heading in to the Final Four. I know later on in the week, I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but let's go ahead before we get to Trash of the Day. Talk about something that caught your attention regards to the 49ers, who are in a weird spot as an organization right now. They still need to pay their quarterback, Brock Purdy, as well.
And they seem like they're in like a semi-rebuild, but like Ayuk, by all accounts this week, is probably not going to get traded. Stood out to me because I think it should make you appreciate more the Chiefs' level of consistently high play all the way deep into playoff games, knowing what a starting quarterback said for another team who has not been going through anywhere near with this. Brock Purdy spoke this weekend because they got like NFL meetings, and so there's like some players around and some stuff out there and some interview stuff. But he told 49ERSWebZone.com, "And last year, man, guys, we were tired. That season was no joke. When you go from July and training and everything and the end of February, those guys' bodies are beat up. It's hard to keep going deep into NFC title games and maintain that level of play," is what he is admitting. The 49ers went to like a couple, not five Super Bowls in 6 years. They missed the playoffs last year and have missed the playoffs, I think, in the last 6 years as well. And he was complaining that the guys were beat because they had to go to the Super Bowl or go to another NFC title game for a couple of years in a row, and the shortening of the offseason and everything else. And it just made me appreciate even more. You almost never hear anything like that come out of the Chiefs, and they have played more football by a large margin than any other team in football by a lot.
No question. I mean, I think Brock Purdy's correct. I don't fault them for saying that, but yes. So
I don't think he's lying about it. I think they were kind of beat.
It's why so many people didn't think they could go back-to-back. It's why so many people didn't think
2020.
It's why so many people didn't think they could get to a third straight Super Bowl, you know, and Travis Kelce has talked about just the wear and tear on his body during this run. You know, you're right. They don't use it as an excuse, but they definitely acknowledge it, I think, right? I mean, you have to. I mean, how can you not? That you just add up the pure amount of games and how many, you know, over the course of some of these guys' careers, they're playing another full season or two by the time it's over.
And it's a three-year run for them, by the way. Conference title game, lost deep. In the Super Bowl.
The Niners played very deep in the season. That's why they had their window. It was open. They gave a good run. They ran into the Chiefs twice, and now it's a mini reset that they got going on, you know? And that's, it definitely does allow you to appreciate what the Chiefs are doing more. I think Kyle Shanahan will have the 49ers in another year or two back in the picture. I think this next year is truly a wild card. I don't know what to expect from the 49ers here in 2025. Brock Purdy's going to clearly get a deal at some point this offseason. They're saying $55 million, $60 million a year is what he's going to get paid. But, you know, the Chiefs have had a grind of the last 5 years. Fortunately, they have the success and the trophies to also go with it. They're not empty-handed like the 49ers are. Imagine working your ass off the way the Niners have, and they have nothing to show for it.
Actually, impressive enough, 7 years. 7 years in a row, the Chiefs' shortest trip, as we've discussed before in the show. But for the point of we're tired after 3 years, it really gassed us, and we just went 6-11 and had a miserable season because all the guys were worn down a little bit. They did it 3 years in a row. The Chiefs have gone to at least the AFC title game for seven consecutive seasons, including five full-blown-ass Super Bowl trips in that run. And so, like if you think that they're tired, imagine how the Chiefs feel. And they have not the impressive thing is really the point of this is they have not let that stop them from being the level of successful that they are. The worst season from a win total during any of those seven was 11 wins. They won the Super Bowl that year. And as we pointed out before, the worst season they've ever finished in is overtime in an AFC title game.
Trash of the day.
All right, this one takes us to the Pacific Northwest. We go out to Oregon, Portland, I believe, to be exact. It's a CBS affiliate. Had a story about an issue someone's having with the recycling bin. Take a listen.
Yeah, this is the bin.
This is a story that begins with a blue recycling bin. But trust me, it doesn't end there.
It is tragically gross.
And that may be putting it lightly.
So you're kind of like, okay, this is disgusting.
Alex Van Dyne spent years working in television news throughout the country, but he never imagined standing in front of the camera talking about...
You kind of know what the urine smells like.
Yes, urine. That's what this story is about. But before you turn away, understand that this could be you living in a Northeast Portland neighborhood, minding your own business when he shows up in the middle of the night. This all started in September when Van Dyne and his wife noticed their garbage bins had not been collected.
So I went to open the blue bin, and lo and behold, there was a nice deposit of gallon-sized bottles of urine, to put it plainly. And there were six of them.
Six bottles of urine in his recycling bin. The garbage hauler wouldn't take it. It's biohazard.
So what does your wife think about all this?
Yeah, she's befuddled as well.
Eventually, Van Dyne pulled his garbage bins, hoping that the urine dropper would go away. And he did. Straight to the neighbor's bin, and then another neighbor.
Sort of started to, you know, unravel. And I don't know why he's hitting the same location so many times. That doesn't make any sense to me. And or why he is doing it.
Van Dyne has shared his ordeal on the social app called Nextdoor. He's been flooded with theories as to the reason behind it all.
Somebody was like, maybe it's a ring that they've kidnapped some people and they're trying to get rid of their fecal matter.
Okay.
In the most bizarre way possible.
Deep conspiracy.
All right. So the last part, that I don't think it's that there's a bunch of people kidnapped and they're getting rid of their urine from all these people.
Although, they just pour it out somewhere? If that's what they were doing, why the hell would they take it to different people's trash can in the neighborhood?
A lot of questions. One, multiple gallons. That is a lot of urine. The other part
is, how much water is that guy drinking? And by the way, based on the videos, he's not drinking enough. He's looking a little dehydrated based on the video.
I'm confused. Why not just throw it in like the dumpster behind a business or something? Why are you putting it in people's recycling bins? Is this person living out of their car? I don't know. But like, that's a lot. If it's just this one person, there's no way it's just one person's though. That's also too much. There's multiple gallons.
I kind of agree to that. I guess I've never measured it over the course of an entire week. There's no way 5 full gallons of urine, right?
Let's do a quick Google search.
In a single week?
How many?
That seems kind of crazy.
Do you?
How many gallons?
Yeah, hold on.
What's it say?
An excessive amount of volume per day, 2.5, any more than 2.5 liters is excessive.
Okay. So, I'm not getting through 5 gallons a week.
No. 40 to 50 ounces of urine a day.
So this has got to be more than one person's worth of this. The fact that he caught him on video, removed his cans, and then this guy just kept going and putting it in other
Not this guy's problem anymore.
Yeah,
he made it. Although he can't recycle right now, I guess.
Well, now he should be able to. He doesn't have any more urine in his.
Well, no, he pulled the recycling bin back. That's why the guy stopped. He's not putting his recycling bin out anymore.
Like, not even like day of?
No, sounds like no. Well, maybe you could do that.
And would you put
at least this guy's recycling. Okay.
Not really. He's putting biohazard
they
material.
They can't recycle. That's the issue.
Yeah, they're not even allowing this guy to do it. Then what do you, by the way, what do you do? This guy said the recycling company won't take it. You got to personally handle 5 gallons of this guy's urine?
Yeah, what was he doing with it before? You're right. What do you do?
What do you do? You can't throw it away in the garbage. You have to get some gloves and a mask.
Probably did put it in the garbage.
Pour it out?
Probably did throw it away, if you're not supposed to. You probably put it in the garbage. I mean, that's what you would have to do, right?
You're not pouring
it out in your front yard.
Where else? You can't put it in the garbage.
The smell would be all. No, you're not opening the gallon and
stale pee?
And pouring it into your yard. No.
I mean, I need a mask.
Maybe you'd pour it down the sewer, although I don't think you're supposed to do that either, you know? I don't think you're supposed to do that.
You're supposed to pour things down the sewer because you feel like it now.
Someone says maybe it's Chiefsaholic's mom and brother. Yeah, if you watch the documentary, they were urinating in
bags. And throwing it in like plastic sacks.
So maybe this person's living in the car. Maybe there's a little bit of mental health thing. I don't know. But the videos.
I get a lock. I think I would switch to a lock, and then I just unlock it the night before.
Just put the gallons next to it. Do you think the guy dropping off the urine thinks it's the trash bin, not the recycling bin?
I don't know. Hard to say. I don't think it matters if it's trash or recycling. I don't think they're taking it either way.
Well, if it's in a trash bag, they're not. They wouldn't know.
In a trash bag, no. But in a bin, they'd still know. Same problem as before.
True.
They probably poured that thing in his trash bin one time, got covered in urine, and they're like, "Not picking up this guy's
recycling
anymore."
Someone says the neighbors should all wait up. And when they see this guy pull up, they should all run out at the same time.
Yeah, I'll be having a stakeout at this point.
Oh, yeah, because then who knows what this guy is. I mean, you don't know. No, yeah, you want to have a real, real conflict. I guess if there's plenty of you, you're good.
I'd take a day off work, and I would wait for this person to show up and then try to follow and figure out where they're going.
That's the trash of the day. That is.
Wait, you would follow them?
Yes.
That's weird.
I got to find out.
You're asking for problems.
Yeah, that's probably true.
All right. Up next, we'll get to the Chiefs Run half hour, but because we've got some Royals baseball coming your way with Vern's On Deck show at noon, we're actually going to talk a little Royals baseball. We'll mix in some NFL as well. That's coming up next right here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in 25 minutes, Vern's On Deck show gets underway. It's the first road game of the year for the Kansas City Royals right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. The Royals are in Milwaukee this afternoon. Chris Bubich will make his first start of 2025. Jonathan India in the lineup after the scare yesterday. That's good news. Also, one other bit of information before we get to a little bit of football. We started the show today talking about the news with Sporting Kansas City. If you missed us earlier in the show, you can check the podcast. But Peter Vermes out as manager of Sporting Kansas City. Unbelievable run, but it was time. It was time. 195 days since they had won a match. They had a draw earlier this year. And then you go back to a year or so ago when fans at that point were calling for his dismissal. He ended up retaining his job. The Cauldron put out a statement after Saturday's loss. Sounds like this was in the works long before then, but doesn't help when your supporters are calling for the firing as well. But we also, if you go back and listen to the podcast, acknowledged where soccer is in Kansas City doesn't because exist of them, because it doesn't exist without Peter Vermes and the contributions that he made. The World Cup would not be here in 2026 if it wasn't for what he built. MLS Cup champions, of course, in 2013. One of the only individuals, I believe, in MLS history to have MLS Cup win as a player and as a and as a manager as well. So sometimes no matter how much you did for a city, for an organization, there is always a time. Yeah, there's always a time where it is best for everybody to move on, and that's where Sporting Kansas City is at.
Andy Reid, when it came to Philadelphia, now he didn't win a Super Bowl there, no. But like this happens in sports a lot where your time runs out because you're just too long. I don't think it's like the direct Batman line and it's of becoming the villain. Like, I don't think he's the villain. I think people will look fondly upon his career here, but like the last 2 years were totally unnecessary when they extended him. They should have gotten out years ago.
And it's a big shift for the whole organization because, as we know, he wasn't just coaching. He was involved in player development and everything around the entire organization. So a big shift, a big decision by Sporting Kansas City. And I think tomorrow there's a press conference to talk about steps moving forward and things. There's still a ton of the season left. I mean, there's six matches in, I think. I mean, it's only March 31st. This thing is, they got
months and months.
So they'll have a long time to search for the eventual replacement. One other bit of news the Chiefs just put out just kind of reminds you about how there's all these international games that are going to continue to happen overseas. We'll find out if the Chiefs are international or not this year, but they did announce that you can add the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Spain as their countries that they are allowed to have marketing rights for. Remember, it had been like Germany and a few others. But add the UK, Ireland, and Spain, part of their
Ireland,
markets
huh?
that they
Isn't
can
there
promote.
A game in
there is
Ireland this year.
Well, yeah, the Rooney family. So Steelers are playing in Ireland to open
Did
up.
The Chiefs play the Steelers this year.
They
play the North.
No, I don't believe so.
Okay,
no. The question for an international game this year is if they play that Friday night one against the Chargers. Otherwise, I think they're back in Germany very, very soon. Though, I think Germany trip is they're due for another one, man. They played in Frankfurt last time, right?
Yeah, and that's been their big push. They got a good fan base there. But yeah, the international stuff, we know how this works. Speaking of football and the Steelers, I did see the headlines this weekend too that the Steelers would like an answer from Aaron Rodgers, even though there is no timeline, and actually said he would start Mason Rudolph week one if they wanted to. And I did see that Rodgers and DK Metcalf had a throwing session reportedly this weekend.
All right.
Why? How? How is the most successful coach at avoiding the drama in the outward perspective involving himself in this? He's so desperate for Aaron Rodgers, and we all know it. You can try to be like, there's no timetable. You don't want to start Mason Rudolph week one. You don't want to start Jackson Dart week one or some other dude. You want Aaron Rodgers. We get it.
They must, behind the scenes, have some sort of idea or assurance from Aaron Rodgers' camp or him himself that, yeah, I'll be there eventually. I'm going to sign this deal. I think, I mean, otherwise,
I'll be there eventually. He's got another trip planned.
Otherwise, letting Russell Wilson sign somewhere, letting Justin Fields sign somewhere makes no sense, because otherwise they are going to be starting Mason Rudolph week one of the season. And Mike Tomlin will still find a way to start 3-1 or something like that. But
or we said it's Mason Rudolph versus Carson Wentz, yeah. Or Mason Rudolph versus Will Levis.
They still, if there was any player, and this is just, he has shown it to be true. I don't think this is inaccurate. If there was one player that I would not be able to trust as much to, hey, he assured us, guys, that he said he's going to eventually make a decision, and we think we're pretty good. He's going to choose us. He's not going to retire. If there's one player that could go on an ayahuasca trip and then say, you know what? I kind of like this chill life of not doing a damn thing anymore.
He missed part of training camp to go on one last year, didn't he?
It would be Aaron Rodgers. Yes, for his Netflix show, which was called Enigma.
Yeah, you're saying go on his ayahuasca trip, he missed a chunk of training camp in a year in which he absolutely stunk. You think he won't just quit? He'd quit.
So you're saying we can't be surprised if he kind of hangs the Steelers out to dry in a way, is what you're saying, where it's like, hey, I'll make a decision, and all of a sudden he comes to this epiphany of, you know what? I actually like chilling on the beach, and it's June.
Look, I think
and I'm
he probably has told him that he's going to. If there was a player I would trust that could just change his mind like that, of course it's Aaron Rodgers. So my guess is he still ends up playing for the Steelers, but nobody should be surprised if we woke up in July and he said, you know what, actually, I don't feel like it.
Is Mason, he seems the kind of guy who got parted into training camp and decided he doesn't like it anymore.
Is Rudolph the only guy that doesn't have. Or is he the only quarterback on the roster?
I think they have one other quarterback now. But okay. I actually, for those who are like, oh, there's no way they would possibly start Rudolph. He's done it before. I actually think they would. Now, I think in that scenario, if it was before the draft and Rodgers said, I'm retiring before the draft, I think they would draft a Jackson Dart, a Quinn Ewers, somebody like that. And then Rudolph would start week one, see how it goes. And then you would see Jackson Dart or somebody come in.
They might be able to get Ewers in like the second or third, where you might just take the pick anyways.
And then you got to promise yourself you're starting him by week eight, though, because you got to find out on him before the next offseason, and you got to figure something out. You know, like,
right.
I actually don't think it's one of those, like, let's sit and develop him. I think that's the kind of quarterback you have to play immediately.
Especially with Ewers, because he's been around the block a little bit.
I was trying to think this weekend on Infinity Sports Network. Grant and I were doing our show we do on Saturdays, and we were having this very discussion. We were trying
Skylar
to think.
Skylar Thompson, by the way.
Okay, Skylar. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I knew there was two. Okay, yeah. Skylar Thompson. We were having a discussion on Saturday about, all right, let's say he retired tomorrow, Rodgers, that is, and they really didn't want to go with Mason Rudolph. What is there a veteran quarterback we're not thinking of that's on a team you could trade for? Like, well, Kirk Cousins, of course, is the obvious, but we were looking at the financials. It doesn't, you could maneuver the cap around, but it seems like the Falcons are content, because otherwise, trading for Kirk Cousins, there's nobody else. They're free agency. There's still Carson Wentz. There's Drew Locke. There's guys like that that you could look to. But in terms of trading, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but in terms of trading for a veteran, Kirk Cousins would be the only one left. There's nobody else, right? We were trying to come up with names. We
trade for?
Correct.
No.
That's it. I mean,
yeah. No, there's not enough. I was trying to think.
The only other team we came up with, and it's not a true veteran situation, would be if the Colts were convinced Daniel Jones was their starter and they said, we're just done with Anthony Richardson, although I think he kind of stinks. But maybe, like, you would say, all right.
I think he ruined his career the second he tapped out of that play.
Would be the only thing I could say. Would the Steelers call the Colts and say, hey, Anthony, if the Steelers even like Anthony Richardson. But
so bad. It's like, this is where they're at.
Will,
you know,
Levis
situation
is the only other answer for the same as Anthony.
He's
going to
be starting for the Titans unless they draft Cam Ward.
I think they take Cam Ward and then Will Levis.
So do I. But
like, again, is Will Levis a veteran quarterback or just a quarterback who exists?
He exists
started
right
like
now.
15 games. I'm not even sure if he qualifies
like
under
Zach
the
Wilson.
Conditions. Yeah, I'm not even sure he qualifies under the conditions you're offering me, which is like a guy who used to start in the NFL for a number of seasons.
Trying to win, I think you would take Mason Rudolph over Will Levis.
I would at this point. It's still, I don't know if the because he's won it. In Pittsburgh before with Tomlin.
I do wonder
when I say won, by the way, he's won games, actual games, he hasn't won a bunch. He literally has won a game or two or three.
I know they don't think on this radar, but Drew Aller, Penn State, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, maybe they wait out a year and they just say, you know what, we're just going to ride it out another season and try to get Drew Aller.
Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Oh, well, that's a different conversation. Like, looking 2026 draft,
I don't
know.
But I don't think Tomlin has it in his DNA to give up a year.
To go 4-13?
He'd win eight games.
I don't think
he's
too good.
He'd win eight or nine games with Mason Rudolph still. He would, miracle. Like, Drew, as much as we give you a hard time, they would be 3-1 in September. Your Bengals would be 1-3, he'd have Mason Rudolph. And be like, what the hell's going on?
With a win against Cincinnati somehow in September.
Don't even get me started, because that's exactly how it would go.
What about Ryan Tannehill? He sat out all of last year, isn't he? I don't know if he's officially retired, but he sat out a whole year.
I'd rather play him than Mason Rudolph, though.
What's he doing, though? He hasn't played in a whole year.
Was he actually on the couch?
Yeah, he was on the couch.
He was cut from the Titans, correct? I think after.
Yeah, but he was too expensive. Like, there was some offset.
Right, and then there was And there was some rumors around him getting
signed in the middle of the season. He's 36 now.
Is he really?
Ryan Tannehill's 36. He hasn't played since 2023, guys. I mean, it's just
Mason Rudolph. He feels like he's going to be 40 at this point.
No.
Feels like he's been in the league for
Ryan Tannehill's 36?
Ryan Tannehill is.
That's crazy.
Mason Rudolph is 29 years old.
Feels so much older than that, doesn't
he? There is no way he's that old. That's crazy. I can't even.
Mason Rudolph was 5-3 in 2019 with the Steelers as their quarterback. Overall, he is 9-8-1 because he was just 1-4 with Tennessee last year. He's 9-8-1 as a starter. But prior to going to Tennessee, guys, you know?
Almost, you know. Ryan Tannehill had a run of being a top 15 quarterback.
I would hate to be a Steelers fan. I mean, what a brutal spot.
Yep.
You're waiting on
Aaron. Loved it for a while when they went in Super Bowls.
You're waiting on Aaron Rodgers for starters. And even if he does come, you're a playoff team. I don't think you're a contender. And if he doesn't, Mason Rudolph, it's going to be miserable to watch. Maybe you win 9 games somehow by a miracle. Tomlin gets you as the last wild card team that's going to get their ass kicked in the first wild card game again.
You don't get a top pick.
Nope.
It is kind of Ryan Tannehill. This is so off topic before we get to the Royals game, but Ryan Tannehill's career should be borderline marveled at. He was a top 15 quarterback for like a 2-3-4 year run, and he was playing wide receiver at A&M before he was drafted.
Yeah.
He wasn't even playing quarterback. He was a wide receiver.
How much do you think? Here, we
makes
can play,
no sense.
We can play the fun game. How much do you think Ryan Tannehill has made in his NFL career? I'm pulling it up right now.
$98 million is my official guess. Oh man, that might be low.
I'm going to say 115.
I said 98. I should have thought about a higher.
Both
number.
Both too low.
Damn.
Wow.
11 years in the league.
11 years.
$195 million. Actually, almost 196. 195 and 975,000.
My ass ain't getting off the couch for the Steelers.
Oh, yeah, why would he need to go play again? He made $123 million for the Titans for 5 years and $72 million for 8 years with the Dolphins. Remember when that was a as you said a big trade at the time when the Titans traded for him from Miami.
Yeah, it was. And it worked for the Titans for a few years.
They were the one seed, yeah.
The final 3 minutes of the show, the Awaken 180, 180 seconds brought to you by Awaken 180. Results every week. Receive free support for life online at awaken180weightloss.com. I was just thinking about that career.
It's a
weird career. Wide receiver, drafted as a quarterback in Miami, flunk out to a different thing, but like successful. Like an 11-year career as an NFL quarterback.
Royals and Brewers going to start a little after 1 o'clock today from Milwaukee. Vern's on deck show about 12, 13 minutes away. We'll hand it off to him. We talked about just the opening weekend and, you know, there's overreactions and things like that. Things you would love to see today, though. 5-9 after 10 strikeouts across the entire weekend. What's 5-9 do against Milwaukee, who got beat up by the Yankees and the torpedo bats?
Rocked. I'd like to see MJ Melendez with the torpedo bat today at 1 o'clock.
Well,
slugging dingers.
That would be fun. I think Bobby's been bad, but like I think for people like, oh, you know, why isn't he off to a really flaming hot start? Bobby Witt Jr. today, 2 or more total bases is one of my favorite bets of the day, and I do think the Royals get a win.
I took a shot on a parlay that I don't think will hit, but
okay,
a little 10-1-er.
Oh, all right.
10-1-er, you ready?
Let's hear it.
Royals money line. Okay. I like the starting pitching matchup for the Royals.
Bubich.
I'm big on Bubich this year, so I'm going to take a chance. And I feel like they got to be down on themselves. So I got the Royals just to win. Jonathan India to get one or more hit, and Bobby to hit a homer.
All right.
So a little 10-1-er. That's what I got in action today. So we'll see what goes. So Bobby to hit a homer, India to get a hit, and the Royals just to win. I feel like if I get the other two things, the Royals win part of that actually is a little bit easier.
Probably.
You know?
As long as Bubich is, you know, is there a chance he has the sharpest outing of any of the starters?
I haven't had a good day.
You know, yet. I mean, you take a look at Thursday and Saturday. Neither starter Lugo or Reagans were sharp. They still kind of gutted through and got you to where they weren't an early exit in the game. But yeah, it'd be nice to have a really solid quality outing from a starting pitcher in game 4 of the season since they haven't had that yet.
Just a little reassurance because you don't really know what you got in the 4 or 5 spot is Vern, I think, pointed out to us. Singer, you could have made the argument, and at times last year with Marsh, with both those guys, you could have made the argument that they were pitching like the third best guy in the staff. Well, you need 4 and 5 to look like that for stretches this year. Bubich is our first look at the 4 or 5, him and Lorenzen. And I think eventually Lorenzen ends up out of the rotation and it does end up being a guy like Marsh or it ends up being a guy like Kyle Wright or whoever. But like today, yeah, I would like to see like for a, I'm a big believer in Chris Bubich this year. I'd like to have it start well so you can actually believe it.
Someone says Royals 5 or more homers today. Mark my words. So I will mark that text down from the 307.
So okay. It has nothing to do with the torpedo bats. It just turns out the Milwaukee Brewers can't help but give up home runs every single day.
There's a possibility. That's what it is. Yes.
That was the other reason I bet Bobby to hit a homer. I'm like, you know what? I don't see anybody in that staff getting anybody out right now. Might as well take a chance.
That's very true. Hopefully they can continue that and get their record to 2-3 after today's action. Game one of a series against the Milwaukee Brewers starts a little after 1 o'clock. That's going to do it for us today. Short show. We're back into baseball season. This will happen every once in a while. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Tomorrow we'll talk a little more draft. We'll obviously talk about how the Royals fared against the Milwaukee Brewers. But it is time to hand things off to Josh Vernier. His On Deck show coming your way right here on 96.5 The Fan.